Officer down, sir, fire.
10-4, shots fired.
The first deputy sheriffs and police officers immediately entered the school.
Every day, law enforcement officers across America are putting their lives on the line to protect and to serve. Their sacrifices are often boundless. This is CopCast, produced by Public Safety Media Training, America's leading trainers in news media relations for police. CopCast is hosted and created by Russell Ruffin, Emmy Award-winning veteran television reporter and author of Media Survival, The Police Guide to News Media Relations. This program is dedicated to the men and women of law enforcement. And now, here's our host, Russell Ruffin.
Hello and welcome to our program. I'm Russell Ruffin. Today, we're going to be giving you some good and bad examples of crisis news management. I'm going to be playing a few actual sound bites from news interviews and news conferences and show you how we feel they did in communicating effectively with the public and the media. Now, that's going to be coming up today, and in future episodes, we want to hear from you. We want you on our podcast sharing what you've learned about news media relations. So, if you found your way to us today, you're probably asking yourself, who is this guy, Russell Ruffin, and why do we need to listen to him? Well, that's a fair question if you haven't heard me before. Those of you who have, we've been doing these classes for the last 12 years in person, in seminar training class sessions and police academies all over America in 40 different cities every year. And I'm going to give you a little bit more. I'll tell you, so if you remember, if you know me from there, you know what we do. We go out and we cover breaking news events. And then for our class, we expose them to the things that we covered and ask them, well, how would you have done this differently? So we try to put all of our students in your shoes, in the shoes of a public information officer or a commander at the scene and someone who's got all the TV cameras staring them in the face. So tell you a little more about me, my background. I'm a law enforcement consultant. As I said, I trained police in the art of effective news media relations, but I spent a career as a television news reporter. I worked for NBC affiliates all over the country. Then I actually worked for the NBC network and later for the Fox News Channel. And I've covered just about every major news event during my career, including the fall of the Soviet Union, the horrible Columbine High School shootings, the Jimmy Hoffa disappearance, countless murder trials, hurricanes, natural disasters, wrecks, fires, just about anything you can imagine. And I've interviewed everyone from presidents to death row inmates. Yeah, I was also in San Bernardino following the terrorist attack. I've been to Baltimore. I was there for the protests following the in-custody death. I was in Ferguson covering that situation and some of the protests. I've even written a few books, probably one you may be familiar with, Media Survival, and it's the law enforcement community's guide to news media relations. So that book's been all over the country at training academies all over America. We give it away free of charge to all of our students, but I am really glad that a lot of academies are now teaching from our training book. In the book, I reveal some of the tricks of the trade about how you could and should project yourself and your agency in the most positive light by being open-minded and completely honest with the media. Because let's face it, I mean, the law enforcement profession is the most honorable of professions. I mean, it takes a special breed of individual to become law enforcement, and all of America should sing your praises every day and honor and respect you. But we know in today's society it doesn't always happen that way, and that's one of the things that we're hoping this podcast is going to help the law enforcement with, and help the community do, help them have a better understanding of law enforcement. So that's a lot about what our podcast is going to be about, helping you through the maze of news media relations and helping the public understand what law enforcement actually does. Believe it or not, I mean, a lot of people really don't know. But we're going to be talking about what should you do in times of crisis and what happens if you have an officer-involved shooting. How do you maintain your credibility when you're communicating with the public through the media? All of this we're going to be covering. And, of course, the bottom line is honesty and integrity. I mean, that's the cornerstone of law enforcement. That's what public safety officials are all about. So we're going to show you how you're going to do that. Just maintain your total credibility, be honest, straightforward all the time, and you can deal effectively with the media. Whether the news is good or bad, you're going to look good because you're the adult in the room. You're the professional. You're the one that people look up to, and you're the one with the integrity. So also, as far as this training goes, I do the same thing for the corporate world. In fact, I've trained executives from Fortune 500 companies on the art of effective communications. But, you know, my heart is really with law enforcement because my family has had close ties with law enforcement. Actually, one of my uncles was an officer who was killed in the line of duty. During my career, I worked as a police beat reporter. And 12 years ago, I created a two-day, 16-hour training class on police media relations. And I personally taught close to 10,000 law enforcement and public safety professionals, from public information officers to mayors, congressmen, Navy SEALs, FBI agents, and a lot of CEOs. Now, I'm not one of those instructors who just tells people what they need to do. I still go to the scene of breaking news all over the country, from Ferguson, Missouri to the Baltimore unrest to San Bernardino. Anytime there's a major event involving police and public safety, I will actually go to that location and interview police and anyone else involved to learn what happened and to incorporate it in my training to show examples of how effective, or in some cases, how ineffective law enforcement has been in communicating during times of crisis. Now, I know in recent years, I have observed that there is, and there's no doubt about it, there is a news media bias against law enforcement among some news agencies. Now, I'm not saying all news organizations are that way, but some of them are. But having been in Ferguson, I actually saw firsthand how some members of the media came in with a presumption of guilt. They just assumed the police were guilty even before all the evidence was in. And for some of the reporters, you know, I saw them out there doing their interviews as I was doing my interviews. But for some of those reporters, it was just a foregone conclusion that police had done something wrong. And we all know that, you know, after two federal investigations and a state grand jury, the Ferguson police officer was cleared of any wrongdoing in the death of Michael Brown. But that was not good enough for some media outlets. They have just presumed that there's guilt, and sometimes it's going to be extremely difficult to change some people's minds, but you can do it. You absolutely can do it, and we're going to give you the tools to do just that. And the main thing is, the way you do that, with your honesty and with your integrity, push out news information. Just push that information out there. Now, as I show you some of these things, I'm going to give you some examples of how things, what things worked and what didn't. Okay, now, of course, we all know, you know, I've mentioned this a couple of times already, that the awful terrorist attack that we had in San Bernardino on December 2nd of 2015. As you know, 14 people lost their lives. There were 22 seriously injured. And it was in San Bernardino. It consisted of it was considered the first time just a mass shooting. Then the more and more we learned about it, we learned that it was actually a terrorist attack and an attempted bombing. They would have, I mean, the casualties would have been even greater had the bomb gone off. But fortunately, some of the terrorist people are absolute idiots. Thank God, some of them are so stupid they don't know how to tie their shoes. But in this case, they'd made some mistakes and the bomb didn't go off, thank God. So the murderers, who were this married couple, I know you remember that, they were living in the city of Redlands, California. Well, they had targeted the San Bernardino County Department of Public Health's, the Christmas party. Now, of course, I'm not going to go into all the details. I know you've heard all that. I'm just giving you a little bit of just to set this up, just a little bit of the background. You know, there were 80-something employees there. It was a rented banquet room, and I didn't quite understand that myself at the very beginning because when I went out to the location, I was thinking that was a public building. I didn't know if it was the Department of Health. I didn't know, but I didn't know what they were talking about renting something. I thought it was owned by the county, but anyway, Let's get some more information in there about actually how this all happened, but how, most important, how police responded, which they did a marvelous job. I'm talking about everybody on down from the FBI to the local law enforcement and the surrounding communities. But one of the killers, as you know, they worked for the Department of Health. This guy, he was a Pakistani-born, lawful, permanent United States resident. Even though he was born in Pakistan, he was a U.S. citizen. So after the shooting, the guy and his wife, as you know, they fled in that rented sports SUV. And it was 4 hours later, police caught up with him and they pursued the vehicle and killed him in a shootout. Now, the actual attack preceding that, carried out by the husband and wife murderers, that attack was the deadliest in the United States since the 2010 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, which turns out to be a domestic mass murder, but horrible nonetheless. It was the worst terrorist attack to occur in the United States since the September 11th attacks. So as bad as it was in San Bernardino, that incident made the community proud of their law enforcement. And around the country, there was this feeling of pride in law enforcement. Now, I know what you're going to say, and I agree with you. It's awful that it takes something like a 9/11, or a terrorist attack in San Bernardino for the American public to be reminded that, hey, American law enforcement officers, they put their lives on the line every single day for the public. Sometimes it takes something like that, for people to understand, because, when 9/11 happened, everybody was, we saw it live on TV as, people were running out, first responders were running in, police and firefighters were running in. I mean, so they put their lives on the line every single day, and they need to be honored. They need to be recognized for all the wonderful things they do, and I think are getting a very bad rap nationally in the mainstream media. Now, let me take you back there and show you some really good things that happened in San Bernardino. You remember the sheriff's deputy that was escorting people out of the office building? You made some reference I'll take a bullet for you. Do you remember that situation? Let me take you back there for just a moment. It was fortunate somebody had their cell phone camera going, and they recorded this. So let me play you the sound bite.
Are you ready? If you're not cool, I'm not walking with you. Sir? Come. Walk to that deputy right up. Keep your hands where I can see him. All the way to that deputy. You're going to make the left of the deputy's back.
Thank you. Try to relax, everyone. Try to relax. I'll take a bullet before you do. That's for damn sure. Just be cool, okay?
That San Bernardino County Sheriff's Deputy is George Lozano. They talked to him later on. He was interviewed by a number of media outlets, about what was going on inside that Inland Regional Center. What was going on? Well, he'd gone in there to make sure, everybody was safely out. So he encounters a group of individuals, and that's when he made that statement, I'll take a bullet before you do. And that's for damn sure. That was his quote. The video goes viral, and thankfully so. When he talked to the public, when Lozano eventually did an interview, he explained it by saying there was a female with a small child that was terrified, and he said the child was just shivering, shaking all over, and he said what he said, to calm down the mother and the child. And of course it did have a calming effect, not just to them, but to the other people in the room, and then later to the whole country. I mean, it just showed what the incredible bravery that these guys, that perform every single day. And someone asked him if he felt like a hero, and he says, what cops always say. He says, no, he was just doing his job. He said, he didn't feel like a hero, and he used the term whatsoever. I mean, he was really, really emphatic about it. He says, any of the 300 other people out there would have done the same thing. They would have. But you know what? He did it, and he got a lot of publicity on it. It made a lot of people feel good about their law enforcement. It cast law enforcement in an extremely positive light. And the reason it did is because somebody shot video on a cell phone. The video goes viral. Well, that should tell you something right there. If you want to get positive information out there about yourself, push it out there yourself. Put it out there in the social media. It's going to get picked up. if it's good news, it's going to be picked up. I know a lot of people say the news media only likes negative news, and that absolutely is not the case. I can tell you from experience, we'd have morning meetings every day in the newsroom about what we're going to cover, and nobody would ever sit around and say, oh, let's go see how bad we can make the police look. Oh, let's go see how negative, what kind of negative stories we're going to get. A lot of stories are perceived as negative because a lot of people that the newsmakers that are pursued by the media, a lot of those newsmakers don't want to talk to the media, so they avoid them. So the media is stuck with doing a story the way, you know, the only thing they have going for them, and that's the interviews that people are willing to give them. So if you don't do an interview with the media, if you're trying to avoid them, well, God help you. I mean, the media is going to do their best to try to get the story right, but sometimes they're not going to get it right. Now, I realize there's a lot of people, a lot of news organizations that really have it in for law enforcement. Now, I wasn't one of them. None of the organizations, none of the news organizations that I worked for had it in for anyone. They were just being objective. But a lot of times it's perceived as that way when the story itself is a negative. Going a little further, I want to give you some examples. I want you to hear some more sound bites. But I was in Baltimore during the protest from the in-custody death of Freddie Gray, as I was telling you. And I have to tell you, most of the protesters, when you pull them off to the side for an interview, most of them, they were not so much angry at police. I know they were very vocal about police. But when you started asking them, well, what's the problem? What's the issue? I got the feeling it was the Ferguson effect. It wasn't. They weren't so much angry with the law enforcement there. But the Ferguson effect made a lot of people feel like they had to be angry. So police in Baltimore, because they were so high profile, and, you know, they're out there on the streets, obviously they're going to be a target. They're very visible, so they became a target of protesters. But when you, like I say, you pull a protester aside, you ask for an interview, and you ask him, well, what do you think? What's the problem? What's going on? You know, people would complain about lack of jobs, lack of opportunities, about the poor economy, you know, unemployment. They complained about the high cost of health care. I mean, issues that did not even involve police, but because police were an easy target, they became the lightning rod for the protesters. And because of the Ferguson effect, anytime any person is killed or injured in an encounter with law enforcement, it's going to be scrutinized. So, also, I want to tell you that Baltimore police did an amazing job. At one point, there was a report during the protest that Baltimore police had shot and killed a young man with a gun. Do you remember that story? What happened was this young man, the police saw him sitting somewhere, and apparently they saw a gun in his belt or his pants, and the police went over to question him, and as they approached the guy started running away. So as the guy is running away, the pistol that he had in his belt or pants, I don't know which it was, but as he was running, his own pistol, the suspect's own pistol, fell out of his belt or pants, hit the ground, and it discharges. And you can hear the shot fired. And several witnesses claimed they saw police shoot the guy in the back. Now, I'm going to play you a sound bite here. This is a sound bite from a woman who was on national television, and she's doing an interview, and she swears police shot the guy in the back.
It actually started maybe a few houses down from that, because the boy was sitting on the steps right there by the check cashier.
And what was he doing when he was sitting on the steps?
He was just sitting on the steps. There were some other dudes. They were talking, from what I could see, smoking cigarettes, things okay. like that.
Young man?
Yes, young man, maybe like 18, 19.
All right, and what happened?
Well, the police came and pulled up right here in front of Jackson Hewitt. The officer got out the passenger side and proceeded to chase the boy, because as soon as he saw the police, he started running.
Was there any words exchanged?
No, the police just got out the car and started chasing the boy. And then he ran down toward the Metro PCS. The officer got in the middle of the street and shot that boy in his back, in my face. That's when you
How
know we...
How close were you when the gunshot happened?
I was right there at the check cashing.
So 20, 30 feet.
Right there. The officer was in the middle of the street. As the boy was running up, he straight, boom. Okay. And that's
was
when...
Was the boy on the ground?
Yes,
or was he
hit the ground, face down.
Okay.
And that's when everybody got upset, because you know what we're dealing with right now. The police were coming down. They were pushing us from over here. You got aggressive officers with their nightsticks out, intimidating, cussing us out. And then they sprayed the crowd while they're cussing us out, you know?
Is this... When you saw this happen, what was your thought process?
In my mind... It was, here we go again.
when you saw this young man sitting on the steps, do you have any idea if he had a weapon on him? Did you ever see anything?
No, I sure didn't. Did you see both of his hands? Yes. When he got up, I didn't see him throw anything. I saw his arms do like this in a running motion. And then you heard the boom, and that boy hit the ground.
There's a commander here at the scene who's just told us that there was the young man had a weapon, and
he
that he...
died.
And that he was running with the weapon.
That boy ain't had no weapon, sir. I was right there. He was sitting there with his friends, and the police came up there and killed that boy like that.
You're sure that you didn't see anything?
No, I did not see a weapon. I saw his hands go in a running motion.
So what
he
do you,
didn't throw anything.
What do you think about the fact that the police are now saying that he had a weapon?
This is what they're going to say.
So you don't believe them?
I don't, not when I sat there and watched it with my own eyes.
And do you think other people around here will believe the police, or are they going to...
I'm telling you right now, they don't care about these police.
They don't care what the police say.
They don't care what they say because they lying.
It didn't happen. It didn't happen at all. It didn't happen. But it didn't matter whether it happened or not. It was causing a lot of turmoil. As I was telling you, the young man was running from police and dropped his own weapon. And his own weapon discharged. So the young man they were chasing, it was his gun, and it was his gun that discharged. Nobody got hit. Fortunately, his gun went off. Fortunately, the bullet didn't hit anyone. That's a good thing. But as I said, though, a lot of people claim they saw it. But I want to tell you, the reason that I can tell you people didn't see it, because I'm going to tell you this as a reporter, when you're out there covering a news story, and all of a sudden a shot is fired, you know what the first thing everybody does? First thing they do, they duck. And then after they duck and make sure they're not getting shot at, they start looking around to see what happened. We had people saying that they saw it from beginning to end, from before the shot was fired to the end. Well, you know that story has a lot of holes in it because people's attention is not even drawn to an incident until something draws their attention. And usually what it is, it's the shot going off. Not everybody staring at a person waiting for a shot to go off. You're doing your own thing, and then bam, a gun goes off. You turn around and you look for it. Then you pick the action up from there. It was what people saw was they heard the shot. They turn around. They saw the guy lying on the ground. They see a policeman standing over him. And what happened? The guy had run, and he tripped and fell to the ground. Well, actually, I say he tripped and fell to the ground. I don't actually know the entire story about how the guy got on the ground, but I know that after the gun went off, he hit the ground, and maybe that's what caused the gun to go off. But police did not shoot the guy. They didn't put a hand on him, apparently. But police saw the guy on the ground, and out of an abundance of caution, they transported the guy to the hospital. They want to make sure, you know, we don't want to have another Freddie Gray incident, so they sent the guy to the hospital. So they're putting the guy in the hospital, putting him on the gurney, putting him in the ambulance, and people are saying, yes, I saw the young man, he was shot, and they put him on the gurney, and they took him away. Well, you know, of course they did take him away, but they treated him and released from the hospital because he wasn't injured. Well, because people were claiming police shot the guy in the back, a lot of people were raising a lot of cane and making a lot of noise, and it looked like things could really, really turn uglier than they were. Then, fortunately for everyone, there was a police commander on the scene who set the record straight very early on into the incident. He told a reporter exactly what happened. Let me play the clip.
Now, I have an officer saying that no one was shot.
Nobody was shot.
How are you sure about that?
Because we have no shooting victim right now.
So there's no gunshot wounds?
There's no gunshot wounds reported at this time, no.
Okay. Why do witnesses say there was a gunshot wound?
I think it was just a misperception in the community that stemmed out. So, okay. And we will have our PIO piece, talk to you guys and brief you in 1 second. I just want to make sure the community understands because they're upset that nobody was shot.
Now, that Baltimore police commander, I think he deserves a medal for what he did. Had he not gone out there and set the record straight right then and there, who knows what would have happened? I mean, there could have been more protests. There could have been more deaths. Fortunately, there weren't because there's a police commander who thought on his feet really quickly. And thank God, you know, you have police commanders because the police commanders, they don't rise to that level of position without some experience and street smarts. And that guy knew he had to head off this bad information. But the other thing I liked about what he said was he said something to the effect that this is just a misperception on the part of the public. He didn't call the person who said it a liar. He said he didn't come out and say, well, you know, they're lying. They don't know what they're talking about. He says, I think it's just a misperception on the part of the community, but I just want to make sure everybody knows that nobody's been hurt. And thank God he did that. Now, as far as everybody being on the same page during the Baltimore crisis, were they? Well, a lot of folks will argue that while police were doing a good job, some of the public officials were not on the same page with police. Now, a case in point, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, she made a statement that sounded like she had given protesters permission to destroy. Now, that was a controversy for a while. Now, let me play the clip. You can decide for yourself. But on the clip, she says something to me that almost sounds like, yeah, she was giving them permission to destroy because she was giving them room to do what they wanted to do. So let me play the tape.
It's a very delicate balancing act because while we try to make sure that they were protected from the cars and the other, you know, things that were going on, we also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well.
Okay, I'm thinking the same thing you're thinking. To me, it did sound like she was saying, yeah, I gave them space to destroy. But the point is on that, you got to be very precise about what you're saying and say exactly what you mean. So in other words, the way to say that, the way to clarify it was saying, no, we did not give people space to destroy. But she was saying, yeah, I said that, but you have to listen to the context in which I said it. It was based on what had happened in the previous days, and you have to take all of that into account. So in effect, I was not saying I gave them space to destroy. But still, there was confusion over that. That's why you have to be very specific. And when you make a statement to the media, make a statement to the public, make sure your statement stands alone. But you don't have to have a question played in order for the answer to make sense. Make sure it's self-contained. That way there's no room for error. Now, when I am instructing on how to handle a crisis news event, I always like to use positive as well as negative real-world examples. Now, today I have a positive example, and it involves a tragic school shooting that we had near our office in Colorado. It was in Littleton, Colorado, in fact. It was on December 13th of 2013 at Arapahoe High School. There was one student that was killed by a fellow student with a shotgun. There were some tense moments for the community. You know, we all had these memories, you know, oh my gosh, you know, school shootings all over America, and particularly being here in Colorado, everyone say, oh my God, it's not going to be another Columbine, is it? But, you know, the sheriff of the county, now that particular county, it's Littleton, so that's Arapahoe County, that's south of metropolitan Denver. The sheriff there at the time was Grayson Robinson. He did a fantastic job of taking control of the crisis and calming the public. Now, really, keeping the public calm in a crisis like that, that's extremely important. And you know why. I mean, I don't have to tell you. You're law enforcement. But because, you know, you want parents and you want the public to follow your directions. Now, if the parents and the public have confidence in you, as they did in Sheriff Robinson, if they have confidence in you, they'll do exactly as you instruct them. But if they don't, it's almost like Andy of Mayberry, if Barney Fife were out there. If they don't have confidence in you, they will take matters into their own hands. But in this case, Sheriff Robinson did an amazing job of not just controlling the situation, but controlling the message and reassuring the public. So in a crisis situation, you want to use active words and phrases, words like active, immediate, decisive. Why? Because those words are active and they can be visualized. You say active, people picture something active. You say something immediate, they picture something immediate. Because those are active words and phrases, and it shows that you're doing something. It shows that you are in control. Now, I'm going to play a portion of Sheriff Robinson's first part of the first news conference of the day, on the day of the shooting, and I'm going to stop when he uses these various active words, and I'm going to point out how and why they were used and why they were so effective. So let's roll the tape.
We immediately activated our active shooter protocols. We had resources from agencies within the South Metro area assisting us. We cleared the school and secured all of the students very quickly. While we were securing the school, we found one additional student with a minor gunshot wound. That student has also been transported to a local hospital. While we were securing the school and ensuring that the safety of the students and staff in that school, we located the individual that we believe to be the suspect and the active shooter. That individual is currently deceased, and he apparently killed himself.
Now, you notice the active words there. We immediately activated our active shooter scenario. So the active words there, immediately, we immediately activated. Also, did you notice he said, we cleared the school and secured the school quickly. So the active words there, secured, so, you know, showing safety. And that's good. Put everyone in the right frame of mind. He didn't bury the lead. He just comes right out at the very beginning and lets us know that they secured the school. Now, listen to the second thing that he said.
I want to again repeat to you, the suspect has been found inside the school, and he has deceased as a result of what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound. We are slowly and methodically clearing the school and ensuring that all of our students are safe. They were safer inside their locked schoolroom classes than they would have been had we allowed them to exit, and that was part of our strategy and part of our protocol.
Now, he repeated something. That's good. That's good. You want to repeat things for effect. And he was talking about the deceased person. So, and he said the person died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. So if it turns out later it wasn't a self-inflicted gunshot wound, well, the word he used was, you know, it appears to be a self-inflicted. So he's safe either way. So that's why you always want to use words like that. You don't want to state anything as fact. You know, just say things based on the information we have so far, this is what it appears happened. That way you're safe no matter what happened. Or use terms like, well, the indications we have right now are, or based on the information we've gathered so far, or right now, this is the extent of what the information that we've gathered. So if any of those facts change, you're fine. You're safe. You're using terminology that will allow you later on, if something changes, to say, well, yes, yeah, so that was based on information we had at the time. Let's listen to a little bit more of what he had to say.
We are now slowly but methodically allowing students to leave the school in groups. We are bringing them to a location that's directly east of where we're standing. They will be boarded on school buses and transported from there to a church just south of here called Shepherd of the Hills. At Shepherd of the Hills is where we will reunite families with their students. We have now directed all families to go to the Shepherd of the Hills church so that they can be reunited with their families or with their students within the next half hour to 45 minutes.
Now, I like the part where he talks about reuniting families. You can see that. Reunite with their students. You can see that. And it has a calming effect.
I will also tell you that the response protocols around active shooters were put into place immediately. The first deputy sheriffs and police officers that were on scene immediately entered the school to engage the shooter if they could locate that individual and also keep the students absolutely safe.
Now, the final briefing he gave, he actually took control again, because not only was he in control of this news conference by what he's about to say to the media, he's already starting to take control of the next news conference.
Before I'll take any brief questions, and they will be very brief, I will tell you that I will do another very detailed brief at 3 p.m., and I'm not sure of the location, but we will put out an all-media release, and I'll let you know exactly what that where that 3 p.m. Brief will happen. Again, at 3 p.m., I will give you additional details, and I will let you know where our investigation stands. From this point, I will tell you that I will allow media trucks and media representatives to place themselves in the westbound turn lanes on Dry Creek Road just east of University. I know that this is a confusing site right now.
It might have been a confusing situation for the media, but for Sheriff Robinson, there was no confusion whatsoever. He was in control. So was the sheriff's office, and the public had confidence. In fact, his instructions to the media sent a subtle message to the public that it was law enforcement, not the media, that was going to be in control of the message. Now, I had the pleasure of working with Sheriff Robinson years ago, 20 years ago, when I was a reporter at an affiliate television station in Denver. At the time, he was the undersheriff of Arapahoe County, and I was handling Crime Watch on TV. And I would take unsolved cases and highlight them on television to generate new leads from the public. Back then, Sheriff Robinson would routinely provide us with cases. And he understood the importance of working with the media. And sure, for the news media, producing stories from cold case files made for good television because it was relatively easy for us to produce because all we had to do was pull file footage of a cold case and then go to someone in law enforcement and have them appeal to the public for new leads. For law enforcement, it was an opportunity to use the media. Sheriff Grayson Robinson is an example of how law enforcement can use the media to effectively inform the public and at the same time calm the public and gain the public's confidence. And it worked for Sheriff Robinson during the unfortunate Arapahoe High School shooting because over the years, the media and the public had come to learn that Sheriff Robinson was someone who was not only competent, but trustworthy. Well, today we heard from a sheriff, from a commander, we even heard from the so-called eyewitnesses. We want to hear from you, so please give us a call. Our Washington, D.C. phone number is area code 202-643-7193. I'm Russell Ruffin. We go all over the country. This podcast is going to go with us, and we'd like to interview you. If you've got some good stories to tell us, we want you to share them with our audience so we can all become better at communicating public. So please join us again next time for CopCast.